about that. I'm Elliot Gerson of the Aspen Institute, and on behalf of the Institute and the Atlantic, I would like to welcome all of you here today. I'd also like to give a special thanks to our friends at the Aspen Music Festival and School. We hope that you will enjoy this program we've arranged for you this afternoon. It's an extraordinary program. I also want to give a warm welcome to all of those people listening on Aspen Public Radio. This entire afternoon is being broadcast live. Just a couple of very brief notes. First, a reminder, please to turn off your cell phones and BlackBerries. Also, we have, as you've probably seen in your program, no formal intermission. So if you do wish to take a break at some point, as we assume you will, please try to do that during the very short breaks between our sessions. It is now my great pleasure to introduce the brilliant and distinguished Chief Foreign Correspondent of NBC News, Andrea Mitchell. She will introduce her panelists and then lead all of us in a discussion of the challenge of Iraq. Andrea.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Elliot. And thanks to Walter Isaacson and everyone here at Aspen, and thanks to all of you. It's great to be back here. We have an extraordinary panel today on Iraq of people experienced in all aspects of the military, political, and diplomatic situation, so I don't want to waste any of their time. We will just do some brief introductions. You know them all. Senator Dianne Feinstein is now the chair of the Rules Committee, chairman of the Rules Committee. She is also the chairman of the Terrorism, Technology, and Homeland Security Subcommittee of Judiciary, and she serves on Intelligence. General Jack Keane is on the Defense Policy Board. He has been an advisor to the administration on military strategy, and he retired in 2003 after 37 distinguished years of public service, ending as acting Army Chief of Staff and Vice Chief of Staff of the U.S. Army. And Lee Hamilton is the former chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and of course the Vice Chair of the 9/11 Commission, co-chair of the Iraq Study Group, and president of the Wilson Center. So thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Starting with you, Senator Feinstein.
Thank you.
It has become conventional wisdom that something will happen in September when General Petraeus presents his report. And others are now suggesting that the center of American politics will not hold after Senator Lugar's speech and other defections from the Republican side. Is it your judgment that the Senate, the Congress, will be able to wait until General Petraeus's report? And how significant is that as a marker? Or do you think that there are other indications that will define policy before then?
Well, thank you very much, Andrea. And everybody, it's great to be here. The defense authorization bill will be on the floor of the United States Senate when I go back next week. And there is no question, but there will be Iraq language submitted. On the Democratic side, there are at least three possible amendments. One would deny funding in end of March of 08. One would set March 31st of 08 as a goal. Jim Webb has submitted a deployment amendment, which essentially says no one can be deployed unless they have an equal amount of time that matches their deployment back at home. John Warner may very well introduce something as well. Importantly, beginning July 15th to September, there are four reports, three of them congressionally mandated, on benchmarks. And one of them, General Jones's study of readiness of Iraqi troops. So those will all be in by September, by the time General Petraeus makes a report. I think most of us believe that General Petraeus's report will most likely be that there is mixed progress, progress here, problems here, that kind of thing. But I think that the fall, beginning when we go back, is a bellwether time. in terms of congressional activity on Iraq. I think the majority is going to change in that regard.
Congressman Hamilton, was Jim Jones, General Jones, sent by Congress, do you believe, because Congress wanted some alternative to this mixed report that we may get from General Petraeus? Did they want their own, perhaps more independent view of what's happening on the ground? And how seriously do you take the president now saying nice things about the Iraq Study Group report?
Well, first, I believe that the General Jones and his team's report was asked for by the Congress because they want an independent assessment. And that reflects a deep suspicion or doubt about the reports that they have been getting and they suspect may continue to get in the future. So there are a number of reports coming along that are really non-official reports. And it arises, I think, Diane, because of a desire to get an independent assessment, probably. Now, you ask about the recommendations of the Iraq Study Group. The president, of course, was asked about that the other day. They said, Mr. President, do you have a plan B? And he said, I have a plan BH for Baker Hamilton. My impression is that when we initially submitted the report, the president basically was very gracious about it, but fundamentally rejected it. As time has gone on and as events have unfolded, he is beginning to see more merit in it. And if you look at the three principal recommendations we made, I think in each case you see movement in our direction. Number one, the primary function of U.S. military in Iraq should be training Iraqis. Today, quite obviously, the primary function is the surge, but you see more emphasis being put on the question of training. Now, that's been a very difficult matter. We've spent about $20 billion trying to do that and haven't done it all that well for a period of time, but I do think we're getting better at it, and my own view is we'll have to do it. It's the only way you get out of there eventually is to say that you have trained the Iraqis military. The second recommendation was an effort to put leverage on Prime Minister Maliki and said, Mr. Prime Minister, we're going to extend aid to you, but we're going to make that aid conditional. And if you do not perform, then we're going to reduce some of the aid. The president initially rejected that, but he signed the bill, the supplemental bill, which has in it what I would call a kind of a mild conditionality. So they're moving in that direction. And the third recommendation, of course, was the diplomatic offensive. We recommended a very robust diplomatic effort at a number of different levels, regional, international. Some moves have been made in that direction. I think that's encouraging. I don't think it's enough, and I think a lot more has to be done. To sum it up, they're coming our way, slowly, and I think surely.
Too late?
Well, who knows whether it's too late or not. You can't, I think, take the view that things are too late. I think you still have to try to make the best you can of the situation you have and see if we can emerge from Iraq with a reasonably satisfactory solution for the protection of the American national interests in the region. And there are many. So what you have to aim for here is reasonable stability in not just Iraq, but throughout the region. And if you do not get that, then it is a very serious setback for the American interests in the region. I do not agree with people who say it's too late. I think we've got to try to salvage the most we can in Iraq. I would not immediately pull out.
General, you're one of the few people here who have real ground truth. You've been there twice in the last few months. You've been advising the administration, and you were one of the people who advised the so-called surge. Is it working?
Yes and no. The recommendation always involved three pillars, a political pillar, a military pillar, and and also a diplomatic one, to deal with Iraq, not as a country, but as a regional issue with global implications. The military one is working because the security situation is definitely improving steadily. You'll get different reports and it'll drive you nuts. I mean, there's one out now that says sectarian violence is going up, and my military counterparts, General Petraeus, will tell you that June is an all-time low in terms of sectarian violence, which is Shia Sunni killing each other. Car bombings are down for the last three months. But what I did is I went into every neighborhood in Baghdad. It takes time to do that, to spend that kind of time in those neighborhoods. And I did it in February, and then I came back in May and did it again. And in the neighborhoods around Baghdad as well. And I'm going to do it in August for a couple of weeks. In 06, in Baghdad, the city was on fire, literally. Sunnis and Shias were killing each other, not by the hundreds, but by the thousands. No one was going to school. Nobody was practicing commerce. The marketplaces were not open. People were inside their homes, and even inside their homes, they weren't protected because Shia militia were cleansing Sunnis out of their neighborhoods in a horrific fashion. All, as you know, as a result of the Al-Qaeda and the Sunni insurgent provocation in bombing the Samarra Mosque, which resulted in the predictable overreaction from the Shia militia. So there was anarchy in that country. That city had ceased to function. None of the government ministries were providing any assistance to Iraqis whatsoever. What I found in February and in May is dramatically different. I was in every neighborhood in Baghdad, and even in the most difficult, most challenged neighborhoods, there are people on the street, they're going to marketplaces, children are virtually all going to school, and the government is trying to administer to people, admittedly unevenly, probably realistically favoring Shias over Sunnis, and that's one of our problems. But throughout those neighborhoods in Baghdad, the progress is relative to what it had been before, but all of them are making progress. I spend a lot of time talking to Iraqis, hundreds of them. I don't wear a uniform. I wouldn't do that. I don't wear armor. The only thing I will submit to is wearing a New York Yankees baseball hat. And surprisingly enough, even in Baghdad, it's a subject of controversy, okay? But the fact is that the Iraqis believe that the security situation has improved. In those atmospherics, I put a lot of stock in, because after all, it is their livelihood that we're trying to protect here. So the security situation will continue to improve. And when Petraeus comes back in here in September and gives a progress report, he'll be able to say that. What he won't be able to say is that the political situation has improved much at all in terms of moving towards some of the benchmarks that the political leaders in the United States are interested in.
Senator Feinstein, according to the Associated Press, Pete Domenici, another Republican, has just called for a change in course on Iraq. Quote, "I do support new strategy that will move our troops out of combat operations and on the path to coming home." I obviously can't verify that, but it does appear that more and more Republicans are feeling either a change of mind or political pressure or deciding that the strategy is not working. Do you see the same progress, at least militarily, and what do you see politically in terms of the Iraqi government?
Well, let me say a couple of things. This is a very respected general, but respectfully, those of us in Congress and in the Senate have been told similar things for the past 2.5 years. Virtually every report we have, things are improving. And you latch onto that, and you go out with a sense of hope, and then you pick up the paper, and you see the next day 20 people are dead, 10 of our troops are blown apart, etc. And this has been going on now for 4.5 years. This isn't World War II. This is a small country. And I think what's happening is that patience is worn thin. And we hear these, and they have less and less, I'm not saying you do, less and less credibility. And you look at trying to make a democracy out of a country that has never known democracy, that has only known strongman rule, that has no functioning institutions that are necessary for a democracy. The law, the courts, the enforcement, the belief of a people that this is what they want. It's essentially still a tribal society. And you see a Shia-led government where most of the ministers don't report to work, where half of the legislature doesn't show up, where Maliki has been saying, yes, we will do, we will do, we will do, month after month, and nothing happens. And as Americans, we have an enormous stake at an enormous cost in this country. And that the diminution of American credibility worldwide. I think we've got to reassess that mission. And I think we have to really come to grips with where American national security interest rests. And in my view, they don't rest with sustaining a government. They may rest with seeing that Iraq is not a safe harbor for terrorists. They may rest with seeing the same thing doesn't happen in Afghanistan and Pakistan. They certainly do rest with seeing a Palestinian-Israeli peace settlement. And they certainly do rest with seeing a stable Middle East, regardless of the kind of government. And they do rest, as Dick Lugar so eloquently said on the floor of the United States Senate, with the restoration of American credibility abroad. I have never known a time in my lifetime of traveling abroad when Americans are as hated as they are today. And that is a very sobering thing for those of us in the Senate of the United States. So where am I going with this? I'm going with this to say that I believe there is a bellwether that's going to change this fall. Whether it is before Petraeus reports or after Petraeus reports, I don't know. But the patience has worn thin, and the cost is so great. And you know, back in Washington, I think it's once a week, they run the photographs of the American men and women killed in action. And you look at these faces, and they are all so young. And at some point, you say, enough is enough. The time has come for us to change the mission, and it is doable to change it.
Lee Hamilton, when we see a new video today from Ayman al-Zawahiri, the deputy to Osama bin Laden, and you were the vice chair of the 9/11 Commission, and he, in this video, is exhorting the al-Qaeda members in Iraq to fight back against the American presence. How can we continue to stay, and how can we leave? What options do we have?
Well, Andrea, the thing that has impressed me here as I've listened to General Keane and Senator Feinstein is that you have two timelines here, and they're out of whack. You have the military timeline, and if the general's correct, some progress is being made there. But the real test on the surge militarily is not whether we can clear the area. We've always been able to clear the area. The real test is whether you can hold it after you clear it.
Don't you need a government in order to hold it?
Well, you certainly do. And we won't know that, frankly, whether they have the capability to do it for quite some time. What I'm saying is that the military timeline is extended for months and maybe beyond. Senator Feinstein says that the American political timeline is very short. And these two timelines are clashing with one another, and it has to be resolved here very soon. My own impression is that the country, the applause here to Diane's statements would suggest it, is so turned off and soured by this war that the American politicians really don't have much time. They're going to have to downsize the American military. I'll get to your question in a minute, no. Andrea.
Your answer is better than my question.
Downsize the American military and begin to redeploy. The Secretary of Defense said that the other day. So this is not anything very radical. Now, with regard to Al-Qaeda, this is one of the real interests we have there. And I don't know of anybody, the general mentioned this, and he's quite right about it. Everybody acknowledges that Al-Qaeda is present in Iraq and that we have to take action against Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Therefore, even if you're talking about withdrawing or redeploying American forces, you are going to have to leave in Iraq combat capabilities of whatever measure, and the general would have a much better idea than I, you're going to have combat capabilities to go after Iraq, after Al-Qaeda, because they really do represent a threat to the national security interests of the United States.
General, is there a way to redeploy, as certainly Secretary Gates suggested that there would be a deep redeployment, is there a way to redeploy and redefine the mission to be a counterterror mission without taking responsibility for securing Iraq, whatever that means, and redefine what success is?
Yeah, well, you have to realize what happened in 06 is the Al-Qaeda and the Sunni insurgencies made war on the people. And the fact that our military strategy had been wrong for 3+ years, that's something the administration finally came to grips with. We chose never to protect the people, and the Iraqis could not. Our strategy was to transition to the Iraqis so they could defeat the insurgency. And as we know now, trying to establish a representative democracy and a culture that is politically not ready for it and may not be ready for it for generations was unrealistic. But as it pertains to Al-Qaeda, the fact is in 07, I think historians will look back in 07 and see a turning point with the Al-Qaeda. The Al-Qaeda is losing their Sunni insurgent support base. They've been driven out of Anbar province. We've just taken Baquba, their new sanctuary, away from them. We did that through military action. But what is happening to them in terms of the Sunnis is really instructive, and it's unreported back here in the United States. The turning point is that Al-Qaeda cannot survive and conduct military operations in Iraq without a Sunni support infrastructure. And that is going away very rapidly because as the American people are fed up with the war and the violence, so are the Iraqi people. And the Sunnis are turning against the Al-Qaeda who they've been supporting.
But of course they have still proved only last week with the assassination of 4 Anbar sheikhs, Sunni sheikhs who were helping us against Al-Qaeda. They were assassinated in Baghdad, and they're still effective in taking out anyone who is helping the American effort.
What they have been doing for a year in terms of killing the most prominent sheikh, tribal leader in Anbar, their acts of barbarism that are intended to shock and they're horrific, to galvanize the people against them. 4 grade school girls, each of them beheaded, and their heads put on an ice cooler and put on the steps of a hospital. They felt that revulsion would galvanize the people in Ramadi to be compliant to them. Quite the opposite has happened. The Sunnis and the Shias are fed up with this. And the Sunnis are fed up particularly with the Al-Qaeda. Now we have actually hundreds of Sunni insurgents fighting with us against the Al-Qaeda. There's a turning point taking place with the Al-Qaeda right now in Iraq that's favorable to us. Whether we can cement that and see that the results through will take some time, but it's clear that something very significant is happening there.
Well, Senator, the two timelines which are not in sync, which Lee Hamilton just mentioned, is the political timeline in the United States going to give the military enough time to do what they believe they can do, or is there going to be a vote for withdrawal by a particular date, and what are the implications of that?
I think that's a hard thing for me to answer. I can say this. I believe there will be some Iraq language in the defense authorization bill. This is the big bill that authorizes everything that happens. General Powell knows, General Keane knows, within the Department of Defense. Whether the president vetoes that bill based on the language that's in remains to be seen. And then, of course, dependent on what language it is, whether you have enough bipartisan support to overturn that veto, I would say that's an unlikely scenario based on what I know today. But day by day it changes, and week by week it changes, and so those changes are taking place. I think one of the things that the Congress is realizing is the incapacity of the Maliki government and the real concern of a rising Iran becoming potentially nuclear, not with energy, but with weapons. And what that portends when you have a Shia-led government in Iraq. Maliki reportedly just yesterday apologized for being able to achieve a unity government. That's a quote in the Washington Papers this morning. If in fact he does believe that, that's a major statement, because it means that either there can be some hard scrapper like a Muqtada al-Sadr, Shia, or somebody in the Skiri party, Shia, like a Hakim who comes right out of Iran, that might be in a future government. This is a non-functioning government, basically. The Sunnis don't like the General Oil language that has come out. The Kurds don't like it. Now, how you put that all together? Now, why am I saying all of this? Is it the American interest? Is it in our national interest to solve these mainly domestic issues of another country at this stage? I think it deters us from what's happening in Afghanistan, which I view as very serious. It's now the heroin production center of the world and is very problematic. That's where it's deriving its revenues. It has, you know, the IED in ascendancy again. You have the first major movement out of a mosque in Pakistan. If Pakistan goes toward fundamentalist Sharia law, this could be very destabilizing all throughout that area. So we have much wider interests, and I think we have to assess them. And I think our military, everything I see in numbers and in dollars, indicates we are really increasingly stressed to the breaking point. The generals may not say that, but in the amounts of money they need for readiness, for recruitment, to put another 65,000 people in uniform is enormous. It's well over $70 billion of net additional monies that are not accounted for in what is already budgeted. So this is a dramatic ongoing situation, and I think that reassessment of national security interests of our country is really very needed.
Congressman, I want to ask you about Muqtada al-Sadr. You know, are we facing an Iraq led by someone like Muqtada al-Sadr and or Hakim? And is Iran the real beneficiary so far of our policy in Iraq? You know, you recommended that there be aggressive diplomacy with both Iran and Syria. They've edged toward Syria, but certainly not toward Iran.
Well, of course, Diane is exactly right when she talks about the disappointment we have all felt in the Maliki government. Maliki talks a pretty good game, but he plays a pretty bad game. He knows exactly what he ought to do to bring about national reconciliation, but he hasn't done it. And it's a matter of very deep frustration to everybody who's involved in Iraq. I don't know whether he has the capability or the political will to do the things that ought to be done to achieve some kind of national reconciliation. I have come to the view over time that the leaders you see in Iraq today are more sectarian leaders than they are Iraqi leaders. And I've come to that conclusion with regard to Maliki as well. Now, Andrea, if I may, I want to say a word about the surge. The next crunch point in policy is whether or not you extend the surge. The surge is going to go forward until September. There isn't any doubt about that. It's already set. But the decision will have to be made sometime around the September time frame as to whether or not you extend that surge well into next year, into the spring. From my personal standpoint, we should not do that. For a couple of reasons, for more than one, I guess. But number one, it will surely exacerbate the problem of getting a consensus in this country on Iraqi policy. The Congress is going to blow itself apart if you extend that surge. One of the fundamental problems we've had in Iraq is that we have had deep divisions in the body politic with regard to what to do about Iraq. And there has been no substantial effort to bring about a unity of effort. And extending that surge will only exacerbate that problem. Secondly, if you extend the surge, because it so dominates U.S. policy, what you do in effect is you postpone a lot of decisions that ought to be made now with regard to protecting the American national interests in the region. It postpones it, and it will make more difficult the whole question of eventual withdrawal. We need to begin to think right now about how to redeploy American forces to protect the American interests in that region. And if you go ahead with the surge, you simply postpone those questions. And of course, during the entire period, the casualties continue to go up.
Let me give the general a chance to comment on that, but also I want to ask all three of you. We are getting a lot of reporting, and you have better sources than I, a lot of reporting of an internal debate over whether to take a military step towards Iran, as unlikely as that would seem, given how stretched thin we are, that there is a Condi Rice versus Dick Cheney argument going on inside this administration. If any or all of you could comment on that, on whether, first, General, if you want to comment on whether the surge should end in September, and whether you think Iran is even a viable military option for this administration.
The surge, when it was recommended, it's a horrible name, but we are where we are, but when it was recommended, it was always intended to be temporary. It was never intended to go on much more than about a year or a year and a half at the most. And it was intended to buy time to move the Maliki government hopefully in the right direction and also buy some time for the Iraqi security forces, who in 06, when these decisions were being made, was in no way, shape, or form to take over responsibilities. And the thought was a year and a half later is better, and they'd be able to take over some of those responsibilities. In my own mind, September's premature. We're 3 weeks into this with all of our forces. The intent was always to go to the end of the year and then make a decision at that point whether we needed to go into the spring. I think if you left Petraeus alone, he would probably recommend continuing to the spring, but he would start to announce withdrawal of forces actually way ahead of that, given the progress that some of the Iraqis are making, and he'd start to be able to, if we go neighborhood by neighborhood, district by district, town by town, and start replacing U.S. with Iraqi forces based on capabilities and what the security situation is, we can probably do this in a very deliberate way and still maintain the security stability that we're achieving. That's my view on it. In terms of Iran, look, I'm not in the Pentagon anymore. We had plenty of plans dealing with Iran always, as you would expect us to have. It would be irresponsible not to have. But in terms of the people I am talking to, there are no serious plans in dealing with military action as associated with Iran. You don't know me, and I tell you the way it is, and that's the way I know it to be.
Senator?
With respect to Iran, I don't hear of any plans to invade or attack Iran either. It would be a terrible and tragic mistake to do so. Having said this, I think Secretary Rice is now of a view that she is flexible, that she is willing to talk. I think talk is a very positive thing. I'm one that does not believe that diplomacy has been utilized to the full, robust, consistent tool that it is to affect change. And I think that she is coming to this conclusion as well. Now, the Iranians have made some suggestions that whereas they want to develop a nuclear capacity, they would be willing to put that capacity under an international trusteeship. Now, to me, that sounds like a very interesting idea to try to flesh out and see if it makes some sense. I really don't like a lot of criteria. Well, you have to suspend to talk. I don't happen to agree with this. I don't happen to agree that isolating a nation is healthy, whether that nation is North Korea or Syria or Iran. I think we have very good people, very skilled people in the State Department. And I think you really have to give them their head and let them go and try to develop the channels of communication that can produce some beneficial proposals. And I think they're out there. I think the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, is a very difficult individual with which to deal. I think the Iranian Quds Force is very difficult with which to deal. I think Iranian intelligence the same way. I think there's no doubt but that they have been supplying certain sources in Iraq. This has got to stop. But you can't do it just with hateful words. It doesn't work. And so my hope for the remainder of this administration is that Secretary Rice will be given her head and really be allowed to move aggressively diplomatically. I know her. I believe she's capable of doing this. And who knows? It might yield some very positive benefits.
We recommended, of course, in the Iraq Study Group that we talk to both Syria and Iran. The good news with regard to Iran is that we still have some time. North Korea has the bombs. Iran does not. There are different estimates as to how long it'll be before they have the bomb, but whatever it is, we have probably a few years. And that means that diplomacy has an opening, and we have to exploit it with great vigor and aggressiveness. I don't know that there's any country on the face of the earth that we've had more problems with over the last four or five decades than Iran. We have a long list of very, very difficult problems with Iran. And though I favor diplomacy and I favor engagement at this point, I'm not Pollyannish about that. I was in the United States Congress when we began to talk with the officials of the Soviet Union. When we began, they would come in and read a speech. Then I'd get up and read a speech. We'd toast each other afterwards and say we wanted peace on earth and prosperity for our grandchildren, and we'd leave. And we did that year after year. And then something began to happen. Something began to happen was we set aside the speeches and we began to talk with one another. And we got to know one another better. And that was the beginning of the thaw. And you went all through these decades with the Soviet Union when either country could push a button and blow the other ones off the face of the earth, and not a single shot was fired because we kept talking. And that's what we're going to have to do with Iran. One diplomatic meeting is not going to solve the problems of Iran. Okay. The other point that is important here is that you cannot look to any tool of American power and think you're going to solve the question with that tool. I think diplomacy, Diane thinks diplomacy, the general thinks diplomacy is enormously important. I do too. But the challenge in American foreign policy is to integrate all of the tools of American power, not just the military. The military is hugely important.
Well, do you think it's a fair criticism, we don't have much more time, but do you think it's a fair criticism that the surge and other strategies on Iraq have not coordinated diplomatic, political, and military, that we've been going off in different directions?
I absolutely think it's a fair criticism. You have to integrate economic policy, military power, military policy, intelligence, diplomatic, aid, trade, everything. You have to integrate all of these tools of American power. And one of the difficulties with the military, and I've indicated how important it is, but one of the difficulties with military power is everybody gets focused on it to the exclusion of other things that you need to be doing. I support the use of military power in many instances, but I deplore the fact that we in American policy often seem to put too much emphasis on it and not enough emphasis on the other means of policy, and that's the real challenge.
In our final minutes here, I know we have to wrap up, but I wanted to ask...
Well, we have Secretary Powell here. He'll clear all that up. Yes. In a few minutes here.
Bet he will. Yeah. In our final minutes, though, the country is weary, politically, economically. We've had an announcement today of several more soldiers wounded in an explosion in Baghdad. If we're fortunate enough to be back here next year, when we regather, General, are we still going to be as deeply engaged in this war, or will we have a new strategy and will we have redeployed?
Well, I think the operation that we're conducting right now, the so-called surge, which has a weak diplomatic and political piece to it, will probably, at the latest, end in the spring of 08, and maybe earlier than that. And clearly, in my view, as it pertains to Iraq, we have got to look at Iraq as a country in that region and what the consequences of a precipitous, complete withdrawal would be to leave the Iraqis fending for themselves. The civil war that we believe we have slowed down will become real, and there'll be a spillover, most thoughtful people believe, in the region. The Al-Qaeda sanctuary will thrive there. That's a given. Iranian hegemony in the region is certainly another given. And their alignment, the Iraqi alignment with that government, will be much more serious than it is now, because it'll have to brace the Sunni Arabs. So the consequences of a precipitous withdrawal and walking away, I think, is wrong. We need a strategy that deals with much of what we've talked about here, and I'm an advocate for continuing the military strategy to enable some of this for a longer period of time.
Senator, July 08, we will be just about to enter the conventions of both parties. Where will we be in Iraq?
Well, there's a school of thought that says this president is going to hand Iraq to the next president. Senator Biden is a proponent of that school. I think in the face of an election, a presidential election coming up, that this is going to force some change. I think, as was said earlier by Lee Hamilton, the Congress is not going to continue to be compliant. You yourself just announced Senator Domenici. Now, so it's one by one by one. We have, on the Democratic side, essentially 49 votes right now to take action with respect to Iraq. As Republicans begin, we build toward that 60 votes, which gets us past cloture to actually put something in a bill. And I think that's going to be very realistic this year. So my own personal view is September, I think, is a certain kind of a due date. What we do prior to September influences that. I think the White House is listening. They are, no question about it, losing credibility. And the American people, candidly, want us out of Iraq. And that is overwhelming to anyone in public office.
Lee Hamilton, you have the last word.
There is no good solution to Iraq. Any option you come up with has a lot of problems with it. That's the beginning of wisdom, I think, with regard to Iraq. Where will we be a year from now? We will be in Iraq. I think we do have interests to protect. We will have combat capabilities in Iraq. I believe we will downsize substantially. I believe we will redeploy. There are a lot of definitions of redeployment. but we will basically not be interposing U.S. forces in a sectarian conflict. And we will use American forces not to try to end that sectarian conflict, but to contain it, and thereby to cut down the violence and to reduce the American casualties. We will go after al-Qaeda, as we should, and we will try to keep Iran from dominating Iraq and the region. We should enter upon a much more robust diplomatic effort at many different levels, bilateral, multilateral, international organizations, and all the rest, to begin to address the problems of Iraq. We must put aside the idea that you can obtain in Iraq a flowering democracy that will spread throughout the Middle East. We have to lower our objectives in order to be consistent with our resources that we're prepared to put into the battle. And that would mean, I think, redefining our mission there. In a word, it should be stability, keeping Iran as low as possible in terms of the region. That will not be easy. Proceeding, of course, with trying to resolve some of the other problems in the Middle East that was recommended here. We need to launch a very vigorous diplomatic offensive.
Thank you all very much for being so candid and for your expertise. And thank all of you.